You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, this is Shovik and welcome to the Mint TechCetera podcast. I cover technology for Mint, where we try to make boring tech sound cool for you and hope that we don't end up making cool tech sound boring. Tune in as we decode the latest from the world of technology in India and around the world every week. Today's episode will be presented to you by RJ Ayush, who's a radio jockey with Fever FM and hosts his own tech show called Tech Panti. Over to you, Ayush.
Hey everyone, this is a special episode brought to you by NASSCOM. We are demystifying Gen AI for enterprise adoption. Have you heard about the latest buzz in AI? It's called Generative AI or Gen AI. It's creating quite a hype and for a good reason. This technology has the power to transform both our personal and work lives. But how can businesses make sense of it all and embrace Gen AI? In this episode, we will embark on a journey toward enterprise adoption. We'll determine if Gen AI is truly business ready, explore easy to implement use cases, and keep CX leaders well informed about this exciting innovation. And for this, I would like to invite Mr. Abhinav Kohle, the Senior Director heading Cognizant's Intelligent Process Automation Practice. With 20 plus years in IT, he leads a team driving global automation solutions and RPA implementation for clients, fostering a thriving automation center of excellence. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Welcome to our podcast, Mint TechCetera. Hi Abhinav, how are you?
Hey Ayush, thanks for inviting. I'm doing well, and thanks for asking as well. Thrilled to be here on the call, and I would like to thank Mint and NASSCOM for giving us the opportunity. I lead the technology and growth office for Cognizant's enterprise automation practice, and my team is responsible for sensing and making sense of emerging technologies in the automation space, especially Gen AI, which is the latest kid on the block. So we are on a constant watch in the current market space. Things in the space are evolving at such a rapid pace that it is sometimes very hard to even keep up to the speed, and hence my team's charter is to keep our practice and the organization aware about what's happening in the enterprise automation ecosystem and how that might be affecting the business, how it might affect the risk profile, and what are our competitors doing in the space. So that's what we do for a living in the tech office inside the enterprise automation practice. And I will be happy to share my thoughts on Gen AI. We have done a lot of experiments, and we call it proof of concepts. And my comments would be mostly as practitioners in this space rather than a theory guy.
Wow, that's interesting. And I'm really glad that you're here on this episode. And I know that a lot of people are going to get some serious insights into Gen AI. So let's deep dive into it. What's this big deal with Generation AI in the market? Is it really gaining momentum? And do you think it has some serious potential?
Yeah, absolutely. So you have seen the buzz around this. There is hardly a day goes by without some new development related to Gen AI that surfaces on the social media or LinkedIn channels nowadays. The excitement is well deserved. I would say if you have seen some of the McKinsey reports recently, what they are estimating is that Gen AI can produce equivalent of $4 trillion of value annually. Right? Some people say that a country's GDP may get increased by a notch, by 0.7 to 0.8%. That's the power of this technology, right? But let's pivot back to when it started, right? So that I can give you a perspective, right? So pivoting back to 2017, Google had published an article on attention is all that you need, right? And that was where they explained how the transform model works and how they could predict the next world using this technology very well. So that was the starting point, 2017. Between 2017 and 2022, there were a lot of models which were created and labeled as GPT-1, GPT-2. Some of them like BERT and Roberta frameworks were created. But those were small, mimified, large language models at that point of time. And now let's fast forward to November 2022, when if you follow the news, right, like the OpenAI basically released this version called ChatGPT. And all of a sudden, there was such a big buzz in the market, right? And the difference was that they basically captured the data from open source, from the internet, essentially, with billions and billions of parameters to create these large language models. Right. So that was the pivoting point just like 7-8 months back. Now, you may have also heard about a term called artificial general intelligence. We call it AGI. And in layman's language, it is nothing but an AI agent that can accompany an intelligent task like a human can perform. Right. And some people now believe that GenAI can take us closer to AGI. Right. And if you remember Jarvis from the famous Iron Man movie, it's something like that. It's like a bionic arm extension of what humans can do. So now again, fast forward it from November to July 2023 today, as we start the last day of July, we see that new startups are coming up, right? If you look at some of the latest reports from CB Insights, they mined around 335 startups, around 50 different categories, right? From drug discovery to patenting informations and all that. And they found out that 91 deals in 2023 in the last 6 months were funded almost $14 billion, right? So you can imagine such a big CAGR improvement compared to what it was last year. So I think we are all past that hype of GenAI. Now the questions that are being asked of us, like a GSI like us or any other consulting company, is how can you help me to take to step towards that journey, right? How can we think, interact, and converse using these large language models? How can I implement that in my enterprise? So that's what is the next big thing, right? And there are a lot of other things around economic feasibility of implementing these models, right? Can we really afford these, right? And stuff like that. So we can discuss in general. But yeah, so that's I think broadly the power of large language models, how it has come out.
Yeah, there are these two words which are right now floating in the market, and I would want to know the difference. So can you break down the difference between the LLM, that is large language models, and the regular machine learning for me?
Oh yeah, sure. So traditional machine learning is basically, it uses algorithms to parse the data, to learn from it, and make informed decisions or predictions, basically. It is like, in simple words, teaching a child to recognize a dog, right? And you show the child multiple pictures of a dog, ultimately, and until the fact that he learns how to identify a dog, right? So the model is trained on large amounts of data in traditional machine learning, and it basically improves the accuracy over the time, right? So it is basically nothing but a technique primarily focusing on recognizing the pattern and making the predictions rather than generating any new content, right? Whereas GenAI, as the name says, generative AI, is something that can not only recognize the content, but it can also generate new content. So it is almost like giving the dog's example analogy that I used, right? It is as if you are teaching a child to draw a dog after they have learned to recognize one. So that's the difference, right? Like, it's not only recognizing the dog, but you can also generate a picture of a dog, as an example. So that's how I would analyze these two basic differences. So you can generate images, you can write code, you can compose music. You know, there is a lot that can be done using generative AI models. So in short, traditional ML or machine learning excels at pattern recognition, whereas generative AI excels at pattern creation. That's the basic difference between the two.
Fantastic and nicely put. And so easily I've been able to capture this. Well, it sounds, generative AI sounds pretty fascinating. But how does it actually help? Could you give me some real life examples of how it is useful in our daily lives?
Oh, yeah. So broad, at an industry segment level, right? Broad levels of generative AI use cases are categorized into four segments. One is classification, second is summarization, third is generation, and the fourth is extraction. Right? And as the name suggests, classification is nothing but classify a picture or an image. Right? Summarization is to summarize a document. or a paragraph or an article, right? Generation is to generate content. It could be code, articles, it could be any memo that you want to type in. That's generation, right? And extraction is extracting the content. It could be from a document or something like that, right? So those are the, these are the broad examples of what GenAI use cases can do today, right? Mm-hmm. At a very broad level. Now, take it at a next level, right? Now, from an industry perspective, how do you apply these use cases? So one of the application could be knowledge work augmentation, right? Where AI is helping an insurance agent to interpret complex insurance regulations and policies that are available in the document, right? Another example is, or another sliver of it would be process efficiency and automation. So imagine an AI agent to handle basic customer inquiries, freeing up the customer service representatives from complex queries, right? So that's another example of GenAI application. Third would be user experience enhancements, right? Where an AI can provide personalized advice to customers on choosing the right policy. So that's basically user experience enhancement type of use case. Fourth could be very common one, which existed in the old world, which is forecasting and prediction. So you can use GenAI to even predict what kind of claims can come in the future, as an example, which is like a forecaster design pattern. And then you can also use GenAI for assurance and risk management, right? So using GenAI, you can ensure that all business operations comply with the latest regulations. So it's like a watchdog type of scenario, right? And I think the one which very rarely gets talked about is code generation pattern, which is GenAI can help all the developer communities to generate code, right? And that's one very, very, very powerful use case of what we are seeing in our industry today, right? So I mean, broadly speaking, about 75% of the value that generative AI use cases would deliver, in my view, would be in the customer service operations, customer service, like, you know, contact center automation, chatbots, conversational AI, and then of course marketing and sales, right? So that's what would GenAI use case, real life GenAI use case would look like.
Wow, I want to learn more about it because everyone's going crazy over GenAI. So, like, are there any real mind-blowing applications that you've seen, or do you think that it's a lot of hype around GenAI?
So very apt question for this moment. So there is a lot of hype, as you rightly said, and what I would give you is a few examples, industry examples of how GenAI is getting applied today, right? And these are all real life examples, right? So let me quote a few of them to explain the difference between hype and reality, right? So Morgan Stanley, which is a very popular wealth management company in the US, is basically using OpenAI powered chatbots to train their 16,000 financial advisors, right? So you can imagine the difference it will create when a person calls requesting for an advice on something related to their funds. Right. Another example is CarMax, which is a car retailer of used cars or used vehicles in the US. And they are already working with Microsoft and OpenAI to leverage ChatGPT to create car content, car research content using GenAI. Right. They have reported increased in inventory eyeballs that are happening on their website, reviews that they are getting, and also ultimately the sales on CarMax.com. Right, that's another example. Third one would be, I would say, a social question answer website, which many people use, called Quora. They use a large language model from Anthropic called Cloud, and their question answer responses is getting again powered by GenAI now. Right. Another popular example which everyone knows about is Expedia, which is a popular travel app that you use for booking accommodations. Right. And they are now integrating ChatGPT to power and explain to users how they can plan their travels, right, when they chat or when they are on their website. Right. So travel planning would be another example of that. Right. So these are all industry well-known published examples of what GenAI has done. In Cognizant, now let me take as what we are doing in Cognizant, right? So, as you know, we are part of the BPO organization in Cognizant, and we are actually, we do a lot of work for medical transcription for our life sciences customers, right? Then we are building a autonomous medical transcription solution for some of the BPO work that we do today. Right. Another example is leading airlines companies in the US and UK. We are working with them to build a chat solution for powering their in-app chat solution, chat agents, basically. So that's another popular example of what we are doing. We also work with a very large pizza brand in the US and manage their entire call center operations. Basically what happens is when a person calls to order a pizza, the order comes to our call center operations managed by Cognizant. And what we are doing today is enabling that contact center to basically deflect the calls to a GenAI powered chatbot so that the customers can no longer have to wait in the queue, first of all, on the store, as well as in the queue on the line, as well as they can get interactive responses on what kind of offerings are available, right? What kind of discounts are available. So that's another example of what we are doing for our contact center operations in the pizza space.
Thank you so much for the answer, Abhinav. You told us about how industries are using it and how Cognizant is driving solutions for major industries, may it be food, may it be travel. Okay, so now we know that companies are all excited about GenAI. But how do they actually go from being super interested to actually using it to transform their business?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And this is, in fact, a $1 million question that every enterprise is trying to find an answer to. Since this is evolving at Godspeed, this is the answer and the approach will also evolve over a period of time. Like any other emerging technology, Ayush, what's going to happen is this will take some time, right? I mean, you go back to historically speaking, it was internet and then the dot-com boom and all of these, there were learnings, right, over a period of time. So it was adoption that happened over a period of time. But from a GenAI perspective, some of the very important aspects that we have seen that companies should be doing, right? And we are advising companies as advisors as to what they should be doing, right? So some of the important aspects are the company has to, first of all, define a posture for adoption of generative AI, right? How do they want to define the ethics? They have to basically update their ethics policies around how do they want to practically make use of GenAI. Right, they need to start communicating with their internal employees about what's their standards and what's their policy around adopting GenAI. So that's one of the very important aspects, I would say. Then they should also start imagining their business processes and identify use cases that will basically add value to the existing business models. Right. Now you should not be thinking of applying GenAI to every use case that you have. Right, and there is an economic feasibility to be done for each use case. So essentially, there has to be a steering committee that gets set up where use case prioritization gets done, right? Not every use case is a GenAI use case, frankly speaking. There is a ROI study to be done for each use case, right? And there is a cost to building these models. So the very basic question we need to be asking when we identify a use case is, can traditional ML not solve the use case? Like, why do I need GenAI to solve it? So that would be an important aspect. And there has to be a design center or design authority who governs all of these at an enterprise level, right? The next one I would say is basically upgrading your enterprise technology architecture, right? And this is a very important aspect. What will happen with GenAI is that, see, enterprises already have a lot of these platforms in play, right? Every large enterprise will have a workflow orchestration platform. They will have a robotic process automation platform. They will have a conversational AI platform, analytics platform, document extraction platform. The list goes on, low code, no code platform. There are already so many tools and platforms out there that how do you apply GenAI within this ecosystem is what the challenges would be, right? How will GenAI sit within this ecosystem that is already at play in an enterprise is where the challenge is, right? That's where people are trying to figure out, how will I now implement a LLM model into my existing ecosystem, right? So So what's happening also parallelly is that all these platform players, right, like document extraction platform or analytics platforms, conversational AI platforms, all of these are also trying to implement GenAI into their platforms inherently, right? Hmm. So the question to the CIO or CTO's mind would be, should I wait for them to implement so that I get a ready solution, or should I build something in my ecosystem kind of scenario? So that's why I use the term that how do you upgrade your technology stack, enterprise technology architecture to manage these GenAI models? That's another important aspect.
Right? True.
Then the next one, in my view, would be to basically set up a data architecture around how do you enable quality data for processing this unstructured data that's out in the enterprise. Because any large language model, for it to be trained, you will need data, which is called ground truth, right? And that data has to be available to be consumed, right? And then I think another aspect would be about upskilling your organization, right? There are new roles that need to be identified into the organization. For example, you might have heard about prompt engineers. You might have heard about explainability engineers. These are the new roles that are coming up, new skills that people have to acquire. So existing people or existing workforce, which is software developers, data engineers, machine learning engineers, they have to upskill themselves. Not only that, even business users, right? Business users can use this technology. Even you can go in and use ChatGPT. I am sure you must have already tried your hands on that. So how do you get trained on that, right? So that would be another aspect of how the upskilling at an enterprise level should happen. So these are some of the aspects of how enterprise should get ready for this GenAI bandwagon.
Fantastic answer, Vinod. You did say that there is something which is stopping all these companies from adopting to GenAI. So what is holding companies back from fully embracing GenAI? Are there any game-changing breakthroughs we need for this tech to go mainstream?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there are a few game-changing breakthroughs that are still going to come in, right? Like today, what happens is when you make a prompt on ChatGPT, you are basically typing in a query, right? And that query is basically called an input prompt, and you get a response back immediately from ChatGPT, right? Now, the way it is charged, right, to an end user, right, is that one token is basically almost like 0.75 of a word, right? And if you heard, GPT-4 basically has a max limit of 32K tokens, right? Hmm. So one of the important aspects is how this token is basically called context window, right? So one of the important aspects that people are looking up to is how can I get a LLM model that can offer me more from an input token perspective? So 32K limit, can it be increased, right? So that is one of the important breakthroughs that is still awaited, I would say, right? Another would be pricing, right? Pricing today for the predictions that you get from ChatGPT is pretty high, right? GPT-4, for example, will charge you 6 cents for input query and 12 cents for an output query, for the generated output, right? This is, if you apply that in the context of large enterprises, this is pretty costly, right? So again, can pricing reduction happen? And can performance improvement happen, right? So performance improvement is another challenge that people are seeing. Sometimes when you are on a ChatGPT window, you get a message that, look, the system is busy right now, or something on those lines, right? So the challenge is, in your enterprise, when you start doing these large implementations and it's real time, millions of transactions flowing through this kind of a technology, how can you assure latency, right? Low latency responses back from these large language models. So that's another breakthrough that is required, right? There are a few others, like feedback, right? For example, today, large language models are closed looped, right? You cannot, when you ask a question, the question and the way we are interacting with the large language model is not training the model, right? So any feedback that you want to give to the model in order to improve is not happening, right? It's called reinforcement learning feedback. So that is another very big breakthrough that is expected to happen very soon, right? Today, some of the models from Google, for example, do support RLHF, which is reinforcement learning based feedback, human feedback. But it is only for summarization type use case. It is not for all types of use cases. So that's another important one. That's a breakthrough that will come through. A few others I would quote is essentially many large language models are getting built now, right? Apart from Google, Microsoft, and Amazon, there are many others which are building, right? Like Meta, for example, which is the Facebook company, they released large language model version 2 recently. It specializes in dialogue management, as an example. IBM is working on something similar, right? Hugging Face, which is an open source community of developer platform, has got more than 1,400 AI models, large language models available to you. So availability of new large language models is another breakthrough that people are waiting for. And these will slowly get specialized to each domain, right? So you will have a life sciences large language model, you will have a retail large language model. That's how things will explore in the future.
So, Abhinav, very interesting. Do you think that companies really need to build their own large language models, or can they just use the existing solutions out there?
Yeah, so look, from a large language model perspective, how you can interact with these models is essentially broadly classified into three ways at this moment, right? One is prompt, which you and me and anybody can do it, right? Which is just ask a question, the LLM will come back with an answer. This is called zero-shot approach to learning or asking a question or getting a prediction, right? So this requires no training. You just need access to the large language model, which is nothing but a subscription to Azure OpenAI or Google's version of Bard or whatever, right? So that's one way to interact with the large language models. Another one is fine-tuning the large language model, which is basically training the model in your domain, for your domain data, or for a use case which is very specific to your industry. So that's like second way of doing it. And third way is to build a large language model yourself, which is what OpenAI did, right? They got a funding of more than $10 billion from Microsoft. They did such a big, they crawled the data across the internet to build this model across billions and billions of parameters. Right now, across these three approaches, right, first and second, which is prompt engineering and fine-tuning your existing large language model, is easy to do. Companies can do it. Of course, there is cost associated to it. Right. But yeah, of course. So if you have a business case, these two approaches can be easily taken. The third one, which I talked about, which is what OpenAI did, or building your own large language model, is very, very costly affair. Right. It takes millions and millions of dollars to build it. So to answer your question directly, right, like you said, should companies build their own large language model? The answer is possibly no. I would say 90% of the use cases would be solved by using either a prompt-based approach or fine-tuning the models that you have, right? So these are the two ways to do it.
Fantastic. Now let's get to the nitty-gritty of it. I mean, how much is all this Gen AI stuff going to cost? And can businesses actually afford it without breaking the bank?
Yeah. So what happens is, in large language models, you have got at least three types of cost that you have to incur. One is the hosting cost for hosting the model. Second is the training cost, which is to train the model, right? And build a large language model or a generative AI model for it. And third is the runtime operations cost, which is when you make a query, you get a response that is called, that's again charged or metered for you, right? So these are three broad buckets of how the costing works. Now, as we said earlier, right, if you want to build a model from scratch, that's a completely different volume, right? That's millions and millions of dollars. So forget about that for a minute. As I said, 90% of the cases will be where you use prompt engineering or customization to a large language model or embedding type of approach to solve it. These use cases are economically feasible, but again, we have to understand what kind of use case you're trying to apply using GenAI. As I said earlier, right? Like, for example, let's take an example of an insurance company. Every day, let's say that insurance company is getting thousands of documents, literally thousands of documents. And in a year, that turns out to be millions of documents. And each document is, let's say, 20, 30 pages long, right? And if you want to use GenAI for summarizing each of the document, right? You will need the training cost to train the model. You will need runtime operations cost for such kind of a use case. And it may go into kind of millions of dollars of OPEX for you. Or CAPEX and OPEX combination for you, right? So essentially, again, depending on the type of use case, the cost-benefit analysis is very important for this, right? So I call it financial AI ops part of it. So we have to establish an AI ops center of excellence to understand the cost-benefit for a use case versus what benefit it can give. So essentially, the answer is on those lines.
Fantastic. So cost is one of those things that is that can be a real life challenge. But what are the other real life challenges that companies are facing right now in adopting to GenAI?
Yeah, and there are, I would say broadly, three, four critical concerns that exist today. One is around data privacy and security concerns. Right?
Yeah.
So everybody is hesitant to use generative AI today because they simply don't know how the models were trained. How the models, because it was all internet data, right? You can easily, you could have easily used the wrong data or the incorrect data to train the model. And that model would have given you answers incorrectly in that context. So that is one important aspect. Second is ethical considerations, which is, raising ethical concerns about its misuse. Generating fake news or deep fakes that you might have heard, right, or something on those lines, or malicious content. So that's another very critical aspect to be considered. Then we talked about regulatory and legal issues, right? So companies which are operating in a very regulated industries like banking and healthcare, right? They would have to understand the legal challenges and compliance issues when applying GenAI use cases, right? Because a patient might easily ask a healthcare provider that how was this data used? How was my personal data basically used to generate some of the responses that it was able to generate, as an example, right? And I would say the last one is around explainability and trust, right? So in traditional machine learning, what used to happen, Ayush, is that you always used to have some kind of a confidence factor associated to the prediction, right? Which used to tell how much confident the machine is to give an answer while it gave the answer. In generative AI today, the challenge is because the use cases are summarization and generation type of use cases, it's very difficult to get a confidence level of what kind of generation I have done or what kind of summarization I have done. So how do you rely on that answer from LLM, right? For example, if I ask a question to LLM, it will give me an answer, okay? If I ask the same question again in that sequence, it will give me a slightly different answer. Or it may say that, oh, by the way, I made a mistake. So the challenge is, how do you trust the large language models, right? So these are some of the important aspects of what this industry is going to go through. I am very confident that there is answer to each of them. There are mitigation strategies to each of these challenges that we have. I think it's just time, like another 6 to 8 months time, by which these questions will get answered. And I think I see a very bright future of how these use cases can be implemented after that.
Fantastic. And this sounds really exciting. And I'm sure many players will want to cash in on this emerging opportunity. So obvious question that comes to mind is, who will make money in the GenAI gold rush?
Yeah. So absolutely. I mean, what will happen is that when you are operating in the GenAI world, you will have to think about infrastructure where the models get deployed. You will have to think about how the foundational models are getting built. Okay. And then you will have to also think about the services associated to it. So essentially, I will categorize this cost a factor of a GenAI into three aspects, right? Infrastructure, the foundational models, and applications that get generated, right? Mm. So the money is where infrastructure. So essentially, how I'm explaining this is, so there are a lot of companies like Microsoft, Google, right, that are already have large cloud platforms where these models are getting hosted now, right? Mm. So the money is with these blue chip companies, which are already providing you a hosting environment to host these models and consume these models, right? So the popular ones being Microsoft, Google, Amazon, right? They are very well placed in the cloud market. As an example, Baidu or Alibaba in China is another example, right? Mm. And then there are chip makers like Nvidia, you might have heard about them, which are again very popular in the GenAI space in terms of the CPU power that they, or GPU power that they provide, right? So the infrastructure companies like Google, Microsoft, Nvidia are the ones that will earn quite a bit of money through this, right? Then the second one is the foundational models, right? Now, big tech companies like Microsoft, Google, they already built these models for us, right? Microsoft has partnered with OpenAI, Google has their own models as an example, and Amazon has their own models like called Bedrock. Right now, these large language models are offered to end users. Right, so again, these big tech companies are controlling the consumption of these large language models, and hence they will get the money again, right? Mm. From this, right? From this gold rush. There are a few very well funded startups in this space which have got millions of dollars from a funding perspective, if not billions, and those are Anthropic, Bloom, Cohere, right? And these companies are also going to kind of be in the race for that rush, right? And finally, GenAI applications, right? These applications that are going to get built on using GenAI, there is a lot of money in that as well, right? So SIs like us, right? Systems integrators like us, or startup companies that want to use GenAI to build smart industry solutions, right? Hmm. So money is there as well. So just to answer your question broadly, infrastructure companies, foundational model companies, and then systems integrators and startup companies that are building applications using GenAI. That's where the money would be.
Fantastic. It's, I think, the right time to, you know, learn about it, deep dive into it. But today, you've given some fantastic insights, Abhinav. And I'd like to thank you for it. What do you say? The time for GenAI has just begun?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it is the right opportunity right now in the market. People are very excited about it. Businesses are spending so much time and consulting advisory kind of knowledge is getting acquired to take this to the next level.
I would like to thank you once again, Mr. Abhinav Kole, the Senior Director, heading Cognizant's Intelligent Process Automation Practice. This is a special episode which was brought to you by NASSCOM. Thank you so much, Abhinav, once again.
So that's that for this episode. We really hope that you enjoyed what we discussed. And if you have suggestions in terms of what more we can cover as part of our podcast, do let us know. You can catch me at Distant Vicinity on Twitter and at Shovik Das on Instagram. Thank you so much. See you next time.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.